Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LeDuc. This Saturday, March 8th, the day after tomorrow, the Albany Symphony Orchestra will present a concert featuring Dvorak's Seventh Symphony, Barber's Violin Concerto, and Missy Mazzoli's Orpheus Undone at Proctor's in Schenectady, New York. The program will be guest conducted by music director of the Chicago Opera Theater, Lydia Yankovska. I said it right so many times all morning and stumbled just now, of course. Yankovska is an accomplished classical and opera conductor. She's conducted more than 40 world premieres, including seven operas. Her tenure as music director of Chicago Opera Theater has earned consistent recognition from the Chicago Tribune, which named her the Chicagoan of the Year in 2020. Very cool. When she was a 17-year-old Gilderland High School student, she picked up her first baton to conduct Dvorak's Seventh Symphony, Symphony No. 7, and now she's returning to Albany to lead the Albany Symphony in a program that connects her Capital Region roots to her current career as an internationally renowned conductor. I'm thrilled to meet you. It's exciting to have you here. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much for having me.
Tell me how your guest conducting at this time was arranged. How were you approached? How did it fit into your schedule?
Oh, well, I work with orchestras all over the world, so often it's arranged through my management. I actually don't know exactly how this came to be, but I have known David Allen Miller for a long time and have been really aware of the incredible work that the Albany Symphony is doing here in the Capital Region.
It's very exciting to have you back and recording this program that is so important to you and will be a beautiful program for anybody. Otherwise, tell us about the pieces that you're conducting at Proctor's, please.
Well, the piece you just heard before we started our conversation is Missy Mazzoli's Orpheus Undone, which has some roots in the Orpheus myth and also is inspired by some poetry. But really, the piece is about what happens to us in times of extreme crisis or trauma. And you may have heard at the beginning, there's this repeated woodblock that just hits over and over again. And it was remarkable to speak to Missy about how she sees this piece and what inspired it. That woodblock is a representation of anxiety or anticipation in a moment of crisis. And as the piece progresses, there are also moments of emotional waves and moments of time standing still, because often that is what happens when we experience an overwhelming event. Time stops.
That's the Orpheus Undone by Missy Mazzoli. You're also conducting Barber's Violin Concerto. What do you want to share with listeners to get them excited about this classic piece?
Well, it's a beautiful lyric work. It's also the last movement in particular is all technical fireworks. Amarin, our young soloist, is only 17, I believe, and she's absolutely spectacular already, playing all over the world. So it's a treat to have her here.
Amarin Olmeda is the violin soloist for that piece. And then you are conducting the Dvorak Symphony, the Seventh Symphony, which you conduct was the first thing you conducted when you were at Gilderland High School. Tell us about the drama of that piece and what it means to you personally.
Well, first of all, it's just the work that I love and have loved for most of my life. But it's very special to conduct it here with the Albany Symphony. As you said, the first thing I ever conducted was the third movement of this work when I was still a high school student. My high school orchestra conductor at the time, Jeff Herkenroder, was actually a double bassist in the Albany Symphony for many years. He unfortunately passed away a few years ago. But he inspired and encouraged me to get on the podium. I didn't even think of it as a possibility. It wasn't something normal to have student conductors. But he saw something in me. He had seen me leading rehearsals in other contexts, and he knew that I loved this piece, and he said, "Why don't you conduct it?" And not only put me on the podium and gave me this opportunity, but he gave me time with the orchestra. He created an atmosphere where the other students and I could collaborate and really work together as one, where I could learn. He gave me time outside of rehearsals teaching me how to conduct. He connected me with other teachers at the school to give me further input and mentorship. And as soon as I got on that podium, it just felt right. I was where I needed to be. And so now it is very meaningful to come back for the first time also to this orchestra, where as a child I saw him play, and to conduct this piece in full, the Dvorak Seventh Symphony.
How does your experience or interpretation of something like this change as you grow up, as you get older and grow into your career? What does it do? What does it mean? How does it change?
Well, to me, that's one of the most exciting things about music. Actually, Dvorak's Seventh, I did it twice last season alone, for instance. And every time it's a new piece in a way, because you come at it as a slightly different person in a slightly different context. And the more times you do it and the more gaps there are in between, the more you have to totally reinterpret it. And actually, before last season, I hadn't done it for quite a bit. And I ended up actually looking at my score and seeing kind of the notes that I wrote and how I approached it and just throwing it out and getting a brand new score and starting from scratch, because my view of the piece has changed. My approach to it has changed. And like I said, even this round, I did it some months back. And when I took it out to study it again for this week, I discovered new things that maybe I hadn't noticed or maybe I hadn't thought of the same way. Articulations that I might want to approach differently, or certain phrasing that I might want to do differently from one part of the piece to the other. And that's constantly evolving. That's such a beautiful thing about music. It's endless. There's always more to discover.
Is it common for you to carry your scores, you know, with you, not day to day, but through time, and go back to them and observe that you still agree with observations you made in the notes and ways you'd like to conduct certain parts?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. There are certain things that carry over. I think actually with this piece in particular, that third movement, in some ways, when I was very young, you don't have any kinds of biases or preconceived notions when you're a very young performer. And that can have a power in itself, because over time we become so influenced by how things are done traditionally, especially with the canonic repertoire. We become influenced by how others do it, how we've heard it performed or how we've seen it done. And with this piece, I came at it at first without these biases. I found what was natural, innate, authentic to me as an interpretation. And I think that has carried with me even till now, even though I'm a different person, even though I approach things differently in many ways. That initial authenticity that is, I think, easiest to find when you're very young and you don't have any of that other baggage of experience on you. And with works that I'm approaching for the first time now, especially canonic works, I have to make a point of finding that authenticity. I have to build that into my process. I have to think about how I approach the piece for the first time so that I can find my own way into it and not be influenced immediately by what came before. And in a way, with this piece, that's easier.
David Alan Miller, who is, as you know, the music director and typical conductor of the Albany Symphony, shares a passion that you share for contemporary works, new music for the orchestra. How did you find your way into that passion and decide to make it such an enormous part of your career?
Interestingly, I have always been drawn to newer work. So even when I was a child, I always wanted to perform 20th century composers and contemporary work. I dabbled in composition as a kid and also in college. And in university, I went to Vassar College, too far
Shout
from
out.
Here.
Yeah.
And in university, I ran a new music ensemble. And I just love working with living creators. And I loved that idea of being able to speak to the composer and ask them questions. When I graduated school and I went on to a career, my first main job was as the music director of a new music ensemble that specifically specialized in helping emerging composers who were starting out and giving them a platform and giving them an opportunity to experiment. And there are so many questions that one still has, no matter how well notated a piece is on a piece of paper. I'd love to be able to call up Dvorak and to ask him what he meant in one place or another. Did he notate it this way on purpose, or he did he want something a little bit different? What kind of articulation, what kind of phrasing? What was he hearing in his head? What was the emotional content? And I can't call up Dvorak, but no. I can call up Missy Mazzoli. And like I said earlier, some of this background to this piece, that's not something that's in the program notes. There are also always a few typos or misprints or inconsistencies. I was just looking at the Dvorak a few days ago, and there's this beautiful phrase in the cellos, kind of a B phrase in the last movement that you hear at the beginning, and then it comes back again at the end. And it's notated with slightly different articulation. And it's so hard to know, was that a mistake? Because that's an easy typo to make that the editor would miss. Or is it on purpose? Did he want it to be different, and did he want that difference to bring out? And it's very minor, but it can change how you shape other things in that movement as well. And I've kind of done it both ways, actually, now, in terms of making it the same and making it different, and you bring out different things with each. But I love that part of it. But also, I think it's so important that living creators speak for and of our time. That also allows us to connect to the music in a different way. The last time I conducted Orpheus Undone, there's a section in it that has these rich bass notes. And the color wasn't quite what I wanted for it. And I was trying to find the right color and talking to the orchestra about specific articulations. And then I realized, it's easier to just say, this is this kind of rock music, right? Because Missy has played in bands. She has a very eclectic musical background. So I haven't talked to her about that specific spot, but I imagine that's where it comes from. And sometimes you just say that and immediately people grasp the style and it is exactly what it's supposed to be. But having that context, I think, is also helpful immediately, because with Dvorak, likewise, for instance, a great deal of the symphony is influenced by Czech folk music and Czech folk dances. And it's much more difficult to convey that style and that quality when everybody doesn't have it as a common part of their DNA and of their musical experience.
When did you get to town, and how much rehearsal time do you have with the symphony before the performance?
I got to town late last night, And we rehearsed today for a few hours this afternoon and evening, and tomorrow afternoon and evening, and then we go to perform on Saturday. I think people often actually assume that symphony orchestras rehearse for a very long time, but these musicians are incredible, and right. We tend to put things together in 2 days, three at the most, which is exciting.
How does your guest conducting schedule and duties work with being the music director of the Chicago Opera Theater?
Yeah, so I'm now officially concluded my tenure as music director of COT. Still running the Vanguard program, which is a program for emerging opera composers, as the artistic director of that program. So I have some affiliation with COT, but I am no longer music director. But even when I was, it's always the combination. You conduct certain things at your home company, and then you travel around the world for the rest of the year. Now I'm focusing primarily on the travel, which has been actually very freeing, because that means that when I'm home, my only job is to prepare the things for my travel engagements and to really have time to focus on finding that music and exploring that music and discovering it. But I am very fortunate to get to live and work all over the world and to see also how differently people approach music making in different parts of the world and how differently audiences take in that music.
This is your first time guest conducting with the Albany Symphony. We hope it won't be the last, but also you have been back to the region working with other organizations. Why don't you tell us about some of those?
Yes, I've worked extensively with the Glimmerglass Festival, which is not far from here. And Glimmerglass Opera,
yep.
Exactly, in Cooperstown. And it's just a superb world-class opera company. So it's always a pleasure to work there. I've also worked with Opera Saratoga on several occasions. Also a wonderful, wonderful organization. Now run by my friend Mary Burnham, who's a wonderful director and a wonderful leader. And so it's wonderful again to be back in this area.
Lydia Yankovska will conduct the Albany Symphony at Proctor's in Schenectady, New York this Saturday. To learn more, visit albanysymphony.com or your website is Lydia Yankovska. We'll link it on the post. The links to more information will be posted along with this conversation at wamc.org/roundtable. It's been marvelous to meet you and speak with you about music. Thank you so much for being here and have a wonderful performance on Saturday.
Thanks so much for having me.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.